It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282. And Let's Talk Legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And we're also on Facebook Live here this morning as well. So join us here. And one way or the other, you can pass a question along if you'd like at 247-7282. And good morning to Cecil and Wes. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, hey, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Big Rock Week. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, it's big time.
Ben, last week, Wes and myself, we spoke about estate administration. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue that topic today. We'll call this estate administration number two, and we might even talk about it again next week and have three series on this. Now, let's just, before we get too far into this, let's talk about those words, estate administration. Mm-hmm. What in the world is that? Mm-hmm. Some listeners are saying. Well, estate administration is the same as what many people call probate.
Mm-hmm.
It's what many people call settling an estate.
Mm-hmm.
Estate settlement, estate administration. All of these are the same words for the process that happens when someone dies. And as we stated last week, one of the first things that happens is that there is accountability that is established between the court of the superior court, the clerk of superior court, and the representative, if you will, of the estate. And the representative being the executor or administrator. Executor is under a last will and testament when we have one, and we always hope we do.
Right.
But sometimes we don't, and therefore the name again changes ever so slightly to the word administrator. The duties are the same between an administrator and executor, sometimes also called a personal representative. So I say out of the gate here to our listeners, I'm sorry that somehow through the historic development of the law, all of these words develop that all mean the same thing, but
yeah, that's right.
The personal representative is the executor. The personal representative is the administrator. The bottom line is that's the person who the court gives the authority,
right,
to settle the estate. But with that authority comes accountability. They have to file their accountings. They have to sometimes file a bond. They have to, show the court, the registration of the accounts. They have to show the court the expenses of the estate. All of the details of the estate settlement are, of course, monitored by the clerk of superior court. And if for some reason this executor slash personal representative slash administrator does not account to the clerk, is late on a filing, then the clerk has the authority to send the sheriff out and summon them to a hearing. And that now is happening quite often, by the way. It used to be kind of an extreme measure, but not anymore.
Well, we've seen from the top down, the state level, the orders come down to be a little bit more strict about these things.
That's right. That's right. So that's kind of the beginning of outlining kind of what happens here. Lots of questions that develop. Wes, you chime in here now and put a point out there, and we'll talk on.
Sure. The word accountability, is is really what that's all about when we're talking about this fiduciary, this administrator, personal representative, executor of the estate. And it's just a different world compared to, the first, my first, say, 15 years of practice. I've been practicing about 20 now. In the last 5 years, or maybe a little bit less than that, has just been totally different as it relates to what's required in estate administration by the actual court. Back maybe more than 5 years or more ago, there was a lot of trust in the fiduciary to provide accurate accountings, to disperse the assets consistent with those accountings, to spend the money correctly and to report it correctly. And there was somewhat of a trust situation, somewhat of a rubber stamp situation with a lot of estates divisions and clerk's offices. And that was just the way it was. There's no blame on the clerk's offices.
Right.
That's just the way it was.
Right.
In the last 3 or 4 years, 5 years, we've seen absolutely the requirements go way up with regard to this third party documentation to support what you're saying. For example, let's say that, you know, upon a death, in almost every case, you're going to have an estate account set up, and that's kind of where you funnel everything into.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's going to show, obviously, what you spent the estate money on during the administration. Could be the attorney's fees, could be paying taxes that are due, other claims, probate fees, you know, these type
right,
things.
Right.
And, you know, now the clerk, when maybe they didn't require it before, is going to require those account statements mm-hmm. to show what came in, what went out. And we were talking about, you know, the Wells Fargo, the First Citizens, the BB&T, the Sound Bank, those actual statements, because yeah. those statements aren't going to lie. Years ago, they just didn't have that level of scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, showing the actual date of death balances in these particular accounts, you know, having those that third-party documentation. So, you know, over the years, I've had a fair number of cases that have come back to me because I'm the guy at Harvell & Collins who does the majority of the litigation,
mm-hmm.
had a fair number of cases that have come back to me on issues such as, well, I thought I was to get this out of the estate from my grandmother's estate or mm-hmm. my mother's estate, and I don't think I got what I was supposed to get. Mm-hmm. So then we go back and we pull the estate file, we look at what happened, we compare what was actually paid to this person who's talking to me, and we have found on several occasions, many occasions, that what was reported to the court years ago was not what actually happened.
Yeah.
So then you get into that breach of fiduciary duty. The executor has personal liability for that. We've had multiple lawsuits where we've kind of had to peel that back to get to the truth of what happened. Well, in today's world, with the level of scrutiny we're dealing with, we're going to have a whole lot less of those type situations in mm-hmm. the future, because the clerks are certainly tasked.
Better front end work.
Tasked yeah. to do much more as it relates to mm-hmm. reviewing these documents, third party documentation, and making sure everything goes exactly mm-hmm. as the executor reports it.
Yeah. It's interesting in this highly technological age now that we still look at the paper trail. The paper trail is still vitally important.
That's right. And I think it's better for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a headache. It's more work for the lawyers. Mm-hmm. It certainly has gotten us to a point where less people can really competently and completely handle an estate themselves without legal counsel, or less people want to
mm-hmm.
because the level of scrutiny that the clerk is going to impose. But the name of the game is we're really protecting the public here. We're making sure the innocent beneficiary under an estate, a legatee under a will, is getting what they're supposed to receive, because they really don't have a whole lot of mm-hmm. a voice if they're not the executor. They're just in a stand and receive type situation.
Right, right.
And there's a lot of trust there. So the party that really is overseeing all that is that judge of probate, which in North Carolina, that's the clerk of court in the state's division in the respective county. So I think across the board, some growing pains here. Lawyers don't
That's
like
right.
have to do the extra work mm-hmm. and so on and so forth, because we didn't have to before, level of trust. But, you know, you've got to jump through all those hoops and make sure that you do what the clerk of court wants you to do. And it's, you know, better for everybody.
Right. And you have all throughout the state, of course, and it's an election process, so you have a change of scenery there too in those offices.
Right.
So. Yep. So Ben, basically, after the executor is appointed the executor receives what I call the ticket or the permission slip, letters testamentary. They then take this letters testamentary along with the death certificate to the DMV, for instance, and they change the title of the car
mm-hmm.
to the beneficiary under the will. Or they sell the car, if that's what the will
right.
directs to be done. They go to the bank and they close down the accounts of the decedent
mm-hmm.
because they have the authority to do that. The bank has, a checklist, of course, that
right.
they want to see before they issue a check out to the estate of John Doe. And what they want to see, the letters testamentary. They want to see the death certificate. They want to see the driver's license mm-hmm. of the executor and make sure that they are who they are. And then within 30 minutes or an hour or so, there's a check written out for whatever amount of money to the estate of John Doe, which closes out that bank account. They do the same with the stock account friends that we have, you know, the Edward D. Jones, A.G. Edwards, First Citizens Investments, Wells Fargo Wealth Management. Wherever the stocks or bonds might be, they do the same. They marshal together the assets. They pay the debts of the estate, the bills, the funeral bill. Any kind of outstanding debt, credit card debt, if there is any mortgages that might be on the estate on, well, it's not really, that's not a good word, a lien,
right?
Like, say a lien on a vehicle or something of that nature.
And all that needs to be straightened out.
Yeah, exactly. So. Now, the mortgage goes with the property. We mentioned that last week. If you, if the property is going to a particular person, you know, one of the children, then they're going to take it subject to that mortgage, of course, unless the will says otherwise. If the property land that is with the mortgage is going out a third, and a third to the three children, then they're going to have to discuss, what are we doing with this property? Most of the time, they just simply sell it. The mortgage gets paid, and they divide the money three ways. So the letters testamentary is the authority from the court that allows the executor to proceed through this process, known as probate, known as estate settlement, known as, you know, settling an estate.
Right.
All of that means the same thing.
We have more to come in a moment. If you'd like to ask a question, you can give us a call at 247-7282 on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. You can go online to harvellandcollins.com and listen to past shows there, too. You've got many different subjects that will be listed online, and you can find the one that interests you, but you'll hear this show posted a little bit later on. But it's Let's Talk Legal right now at 247-7282, answering your questions. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. We have a caller standing by. Let's go to Jerry in Moorhead City. Hi, Jerry. How are you?
Just fine.
All right.
My question is, last week you mentioned that you could have in the will a provision that a bond wouldn't be required. And I wondered, my executor for my will lives out of state. And I was looking at the ordinance, and it looks like maybe it doesn't apply if they live out of state. Is that correct?
No, my friend. Let's talk about that, and that's just an excellent question, Jerry. If the will waives the bond, which almost all last will and testaments do, then the bond is waived. Whether or not the executor is in state, out of state, wherever the executor might be located. Now, this is the little bit of a catch. This is the catch. An out-of-state executor has to find within the state of North Carolina what is known as a resident processing agent, okay? And many times this is the lawyer, or it can be whoever they can find, maybe in one of the heirs in the state if there is no lawyer involved, like, you know, but they're going to have to find someone within the state to be their resident processing agent. Now, those are big words, and what those words mean, Jerry, is that if there is a lawsuit or there is some sort of controversy concerning this estate, then we are not going to require the residents of North Carolina or the creditors to go to Tennessee or New York or California, wherever your executor might live, to give them notice of the issue concerning the estate. That notice would go to the resident processing agent within our state of North Carolina, and then they would, if you would, pass it on to your, quote, out-of-state executor. So there are two different issues, Jerry. One is your question about the bond, and that was a good question, but an out-of-state executor can serve without a bond if the will waives it. But it is important that we say the other side of the coin there is that the out-of-state executor has to have an in-state processing agent.
Okay. since my will doesn't have that provision, can I just do an addendum to the will that makes the provision for no bond?
You can do that. You can do a codicil, but it has to have all of the requirements of a valid North Carolina will. So it would need to be, you know, two witnesses, self-proving. There's some detail that goes into that. Arguably, you could do it all in your own handwriting and sign it as a codicil, which would be a holographic will. But now we're getting into things that probably are a little bit more complicated. The recommendation would be to sit down with your attorney and just make that change. I think it would be very inexpensive to make that change, and it would be worthwhile that it's very clear as to what your intention is with regard to that.
Okay, I certainly appreciate your advice on this.
You're welcome, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
I mean, Ben, this is a good place to take the fear out of this a little bit, which Wes and I try to do each Tuesday morning.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, a simple will, Jerry maybe has a very simple will, everything mm-hmm. to the wife and then to the children or whatever. I mean, you know, that's $250 at mm-hmm. our office.
Right. Right.
This is not, you know, something that people have to fear.
Mm-hmm.
And yet to have it professionally done by an attorney, it doesn't have to be Harvell and Collins, by any good lawyer, mm-hmm. you know, in our community and or Newbern, Jacksonville, Wilmington. But to have it done professionally is probably a very smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
These wills also last for a long time. You know, 5, 7, 10 years if there's no dramatic change in the family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, I mean, that kind of, you know, we have to weigh the cost of it against there being a problem.
Right.
The bond for Jerry, he's now alerted to that issue, and that's so great for, that's wonderful for him. But my word, if he doesn't get that handled properly,
mm-hmm.
the bond in his estate could be several thousand dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You see.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Not to mention the delay. Takes quite a bit of a delay, several weeks to get a bond.
Yeah, it's an insurance product.
It's an insurance product. Yeah. It's basically an insurance policy
mm-hmm.
that says that if your executor takes the money and goes to the Bahamas with it and does not distribute it three ways,
mm-hmm.
then you can make a claim against, you know, State Farm, Jefferson Pilot, New York Life, mm-hmm. whoever writes the bond.
Right.
A bond is an insurance policy.
All right. There you go. We're going to take a short break, come back, and finish it up here for this session, talking about estate administration. Again, if you have questions, 247-7282. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station every Tuesday morning. Let's talk legal with Harvell and Collins. Talk about estate administration.
Yeah. A bond is an insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
An insurance policy isn't free. It comes with what? A premium.
That's right.
A payment of a premium. So just wanted to add that little bit.
Yeah, okay? That's right.
Yeah, we don't want to have to pay that premium. That's $2,000 or $3,000 that we can avoid if it's waived in the will.
Of course, that the waiving of that is mm-hmm. meaning that you trust that that your executor is not going to be.
Well, that's absolutely true. But let's that is true.
Yeah.
But let's hope that the named executor, since you're taking the time like Jerry to review your document, and that's the named executor that you're appointing,
right.
that you trust them.
See, so I can't think yes. of one situation where we have ever had to collect off of a bond in an estate.
No, mm-hmm. I have never done it.
So, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. there, it's necessary under the law if you don't waive it.
Mm-hmm.
But
what about
you hardly ever need it. So it's just one of those premiums that you pay mm-hmm. that you don't
What about when an administrator is appointed intestate? Is there a bond then?
Yes,
yeah,
yeah. Absolutely.
There's no waiver.
Because,
right.
see, there's no waiver because
yeah.
there's no will.
Right.
So in all estates, where there's no will,
mm-hmm.
there will have to be a bond. Now, the heirs of the estate, the heirs at law, can waive the bond
mm-hmm.
at the time that the administrator qualifies. They mm-hmm. can sign a waiver, but every single one of the heirs are going to have to sign that document. And there are quite a few times that we can't accomplish that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think I remember that document being passed around to waive right. that from my father-in-law.
Let's go here a minute, Ben, in our last few minutes. Mm-hmm. Taxes, tax returns. Let's get some demystification going on here. Mm-hmm. Listen, folks, the estate tax is kind of, it's just a thing of the past.
Right. Right.
I mean, we're up to $10+ million per person,
mm-hmm.
$20 million+ for a married couple before we have any estate tax. So let me get that out there for all of our listeners. Now, you folks that are out there that are over $10 million and $20 million, then you need to see an estate tax lawyer like what mm-hmm. we have at Harvell and Collins, and we'll
right.
help you.
Right.
But those folks, you know, are few and far between. Yeah.
I don't know.
So what am I saying here? The words estate tax.
A lot of them are fishing today.
Yeah, that's right.
Estate tax, inheritance tax, death tax. There we go again, we lawyers, mm-hmm. using multiple words meaning the same thing.
Death tax,
inheritance tax, estate tax. All of those mean the same thing, and your estate is going to need to be over $10 million+ in order to trigger an estate tax.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the executor does have to file the last tax return, the
right.
1040, mm-hmm. for the decedent.
you still can't get away from that.
No, you can't get away from that. And let's keep in mind, we'll talk more about this next week, but let's keep in mind that many times the executor needs to obtain copies of the last 2 or 3, 4 or 5 years of the tax returns
right.
of the decedent. And they absolutely are able to do that with the letters testamentary.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the letters testamentary is that authority. It's telling the Internal Revenue Service that I'm the executor. Here's the death certificate. Here's the letters testamentary. And there's a form that we file, and we're able to obtain the last tax returns.
Right.
And they're very helpful, usually, in the settlement of an estate.
Because, and the estate can still earn income. Estates are kept around
correct.
For a while.
The estate can earn income, and if it does, then the estate will need to file an income tax return at mm-hmm. the estate level. That's known as a fiduciary income tax return.
Yeah.
All right. But the estate tax, which was such a
right.
driving force for so many folks for so long, you mm-hmm. know, the saving of the family farm, the saving of the family business. Again, if it's over $10 million, then we've got to address that.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's under $10 million, then there is no tax. And I say this, Ben, because so few people, it seems, really know that.
Well, it's been a moving target for a long time.
It has been a moving target. I mean, there's just hardly a day of the week that people don't come in. They say, well, Mr. Harvell, I'm here to get my will done, but what about the taxes?
Yeah.
What about this estate tax?
I mean, since we've done this show, it was $1 million at one time.
Yes.
Right.
Then there was none.
Correct.
For a year.
Yep.
Right.
And
yeah. 2010, right?
Yeah, and then it went back. So it'll probably be a moving target next year, Tim. So
right.
You never know. All right. But if you want to find out more about your legal life and get those papers in order, you want to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. Again, go online at harvellandcollins.com.